You're listening to Limelight, part of the We Love Where You Live podcast series brought to you by the Michigan Municipal League. Here's your host, Emily Kalishewski.
Welcome to Limelight, a podcast dedicated to the incredible work being done at the local level, the stories behind the people that do it, and topics that matter to them. I'm your host, Emily Kalishewski, and with me today is Deborah Stewart, City Administrator for the City of Mason, and the recipient of the League's prestigious 2018 Community Builder Award. Deborah has over 15 years of local and state experience assisting community and economic development projects come to fruition. She most recently served as the Community Development Incentives Director for the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Prior to this position, Deborah served 3 years as the MEDC Community Assistance Team Specialist for 26 counties in Jackson for 7 years in various economic development roles. She holds a bachelor's degree in communication from Central Michigan University and a master's degree in public administration from Western Michigan University. Welcome, Deb. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So first things first, congratulations on receiving the 2018 Community Builder Award. For our listeners who may be unfamiliar, this award honors individuals whose leadership creates positive community change. So these are through efforts such as encouraging civic engagement, supporting up-and-coming leaders, fostering good working relationships, thinking strategically, et cetera, et cetera. These people make their community a place where people truly love to live and work. So congrats. That's excellent.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. So you were specifically recognized for this award based on your outstanding work in leadership and economic development in your community and across the state. Since coming into your role here in Mason, which was in 2016, correct?
Mm-hmm.
What have been the biggest wins in regards to economic development for Mason?
I think since I've been here, we've had a couple different areas that we focused on. And just from your perspective, it's more than just about economic development. It's about resiliency for our community. We have to balance our tax portfolio, our taxpayers. And so when I came, we had one taxpayer that was more than 24% of our tax base. And so it was really important that, one, we prioritize those taxpayers that have the highest percentage to make sure we retain them, but also that we diversify that portfolio. So some of those big wins were a manufacturing company that is that highest taxpayer was looking at an expansion in another location. And we were given the chance to pitch Mason, and we were successful in getting an expansion here. But what a lot of community members don't know is that if they wouldn't have made that investment, they were planning to leave within 2 years, which would have been devastating for our community.
Right.
And so in making sure that we're doing those retention, that retention work with our current businesses to see where their needs are, to make sure that they're continually investing in these facilities, because that's a great example of a decision that's made not even in the U.S. And so how do we make sure that they're still thinking of Mason?
Right.
On the community development side, we've done a lot of work downtown. We're just enhancing what we're doing. We have some we have a new multi-story construction going in that's going to be mixed use. We have a full renovation of an existing vacant building that's going in. But probably one of our most focused wins in the last year has been a recruitment of a hotel, a national chain hotel, which was done without any incentives, which was important to us.
Mm-hmm.
It was about making the case for Mason and that we had the demographics to support it. And we were able to make that case, and that hotel will be starting construction next fall.
Sure. So you talked a little bit about Mason having those demographics. What were the demographics? How did you pitch that to that hotel chain?
Well, it's difficult because when you start to talk about hotels, they look at what service area they have. And mm-hmm. we are right in the perfect location between Jackson and Lansing to really hit a lot of existing chains.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to show we had the demographics to support a hotel, but also we had to show that we could attract a chain that isn't in the existing market.
Mm-hmm.
But the study alone didn't do that. So we had to go to our businesses to say, how many hotel stays are you paying for?
Mm-hmm.
For example, Dart Container pays for almost 365 days a year.
Mm-hmm.
Easily, they fill hotels for an entire week at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And so as soon as we could show a hotel chain that we have this business support that is being sent other locations but would like to stay in Mason, and also the commitment from those businesses that they would support a hotel in Mason first.
Mm-hmm.
And so that negotiation involved talking to that hotel and saying, you have to have the rooms at a certain level in order for them to pick you,
mm-hmm.
which they were comfortable doing as long as they knew they had the commitment.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a lot of behind the scenes, and it took almost a year and a half to get that commitment, but we were successful in doing it.
So it sounds like you brought a lot of stakeholders together. Do you have any advice for other communities who are looking at a similar project and how to really garner that support?
I think it's about really identifying the need. So when I started doing retention visits, a lot of our businesses were saying, we're sending a lot of our workers out of town. You know, we bring them in as contract workers, we're paying for rental cars, we're paying for a lot of things, and we could really use a hotel here, not just because, hey, I have family that's coming in for the weekend, but we would support them on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And so we knew that the market study wasn't showing the true need, so we had to do a little additional work. Mm-hmm. It's important to let the market drive those developments. Mm-hmm. You do not want someone to be investing in your community or having to subsidize that investment and then it not work a year from then or 2 years from then. So we wanted to make sure that the market showed it. And if it didn't, if the study didn't show that we could support it, we weren't going to go after a hotel.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So the leak was just here, a group of us, a few months ago, and you gave us a great walking tour of the downtown, and you talked about a couple of the developments and how the downtown has really shifted since you came on in 2016. So can you talk a little bit about the shift that you've seen in the downtown area?
Well, I would love to take all the credit in the world for it, but I can't because what was happening in Mason has been happening for years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in my previous position at the MEDC, I covered a lot of counties, and Ingham County was one of them, and Mason was one of the two communities, I won't name the other one, that really stood out to me that were putting together the right pieces. Mm-hmm. They were doing residential rehab above storefronts long before anyone else was. Mm-hmm. They were starting to really make sure they understood this sense of place concept mm-hmm. before a lot of people because they had it existing with the courthouse square. And so they were putting a lot of the pieces in place and they were starting to get some good development. I think all I was able to do when I came in was identify other incentives that could potentially get somebody over that threshold, but also start focusing not just on what downtown businesses needed immediately, but what could support them. Mm-hmm. You know, when we talk about a hotel, for example, it's not just about getting nights stay here. It's about those people staying there supporting our downtown businesses mm-hmm. and having other offset support when we're sending people away from Mason when they want to stay here overnight. Mm-hmm. That's business that our downtown businesses are losing or our community businesses are losing.
Right.
And so it's about how do we make sure that they're supporting each other? How do we make sure that the businesses that we're trying to attract for downtown are supportive to other businesses, mm-hmm. that they're going to open doors for them too?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to shift gears a little bit because when we were here, like I said, a few months ago, you had mentioned that there is a strong program for recruitment here in Mason for your fire department. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, when you go to a lot of other communities, you'll find that they're struggling to maintain, especially paid on call firefighters. Mm-hmm. That was not the case when I came to Mason, and I found it really interesting of why we were so different. And what happened was it was clear when you start looking at the events we have, our fire department is really focused on getting our kids excited about firefighting from mm-hmm. a very young age. It's not just about fire prevention training and things like that. It's mm-hmm. about getting them excited about the fire department. They get to play on the trucks all the time. We do tons of events where they get to be in the firehouse. And so what we learned was that kids were excited from the very beginning, you know, and so they naturally wanted to get back to the community and be part of that. That takes a long time to develop. So they'd mm-hmm. been doing that for years. But in the short time already, we have shifted to making that a citywide focus. Mm-hmm. And so now every one of those events, our DPW trucks are there. Mm-hmm. We have our police cars there. We have our planning department there talking about zoning and, you know, really thinking about how do you deal with water from our water treatment plant. And the goal is to get kids excited from a very young age that this is a career they can go into and really be successful mm-hmm. and give back to their community.
Sure. Well, that's excellent. And I think something that many of our communities are working on, just community outreach, community engagement, and certainly that's something we hear from our members as far as issues regarding the fire department. So what an interesting program. Certainly, you have a long history of work in the economic development field. I'd like to talk for a moment about the shift from working in that arena to local government management. What interested you in this career coming from MEDC, and what prompted you to make that shift?
Well, it's sort of a long story in that, you know, I started in local government. I was really interested in it, but it's hard work. local government is really hard work. Sure. It takes a long time to get things done. There's a lot of consensus building. And I moved to the state and doing that work, and I just really enjoyed it. I got to go and do the best of both worlds, right? Mm-hmm. I could go into a community, help them get a project done and leave, and not have to do a lot of the hard work of really, you know, building the stakeholders and all of those things. Mm-hmm. But the more I worked at the state, the more I realized that I really actually enjoyed that part, mm-hmm. and the hard work, and also the success when it happens, how rewarding that is. And so my husband and I had been looking for a long-term place where we could raise our kids. And we joked that we dated Mason for a very long time. We drove by, we would come here for dinner. We just thought we're considering it as a place we wanted to be. And I remember very vividly, we were driving through and they had a movie going on at the square, at the courthouse square. And my son said, "This is the place I want to live." And it was, he's like, "This is it. This is where they have movies outside. This is great." You know? And so sure. It's the things that kids, you know, remember. Right. And so it wasn't the decision point, but it definitely helped us move in this direction. And so we knew we were going to live here. And then this position became available. And I thought to myself, what better way to give back to a community that I was really excited to be in, but also to really have an impact from all that I had learned at the state, mm-hmm. having been able to participate in all those communities and learn what they had done and take bits and pieces from those and actually have an impact. And more than anything, I could bike to work. I could, mm-hmm. you know, be part of my kids' lives and really see how the hard work resulted in rewards, you know, sure. and having that impact. So I applied for the position and I got selected, and it's been great ever since. And this is what I definitely was meant to do. I can tell every day that this is the right fit for me right now.
Well, that is excellent to hear. But I'm sure it wasn't a completely smooth transition. What were some of the challenges that you encountered just making that shift from not working in local government management and working with MEDC to coming onto this position?
Well, I think probably the hardest part was really learning to set some boundaries, because mm-hmm. you could be involved in everything all day long. And I am very lucky to have a supportive council that mm-hmm. reminds me that in my interview, I said I would put my family first and mm-hmm. that I wouldn't be always available. So they remind me of that. And so they're very supportive and step in, and they'll do events and cover and represent the city great. And I learned that I don't have to be at everything. Sure. So that was a big adjustment, because you're just so excited about the work you're doing. You could be everywhere all the time,
right.
but it's just not feasible. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely an adjustment. And how much time it takes to get things done. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had a goal of within the first 6 months, within the first year, I wanted to accomplish. And I'm, you know, 2.5 years in, and there's still some things on that list mm-hmm. that, you know, we're plugging away at, but they take some time to do.
Sure, sure. So considering your background, what surprised you most when you came into this position? How has your mindset shifted from before being the city administrator to after, now that you're actually in the field doing the job?
I think there's a lot of things that you could get distracted by in this role. Mm-hmm. And I'm very fortunate that I have a very clear vision from my council of what Mason as a community should be and what Mason should be from a service perspective of what we provide. Mm-hmm. And so that vision is crystal clear in that we are going to be a provider of critical services in the best way possible. Our customers will always be first, mm-hmm. and we're going to do everything we can do to provide them the best service. But we're not going to overspend on a lot of things that are going to get us in a place where we can't be long-term financially resilient.
Sure.
What that means is that you can have a lot of great ideas, and everyone jokes around here that the splash pad is my thing, right? It's the sure. thing that if it wasn't Mason, I'd be pushing for, because while there are many community members, including myself, who would love a splash pad, is that financially stable for us to do? Is that the type of investment that we can maintain long-term? Mm-hmm. We have to maintain the things we have first. Mm-hmm. And so while many of us want to do a lot of things, we have to be very focused. And so that kind of surprised me, of coming into a community that was that focused. Mm-hmm. It actually makes my job easier, but you have to constantly remember that, you know?
Right, sure. So you've talked in the past about Mason taking steps to intentionally transform into a very family-friendly place to work. What was that process like, and what were those transformations?
You know, it's interesting because I've been asked a couple times to speak on that issue. Mm-hmm. And I always start those discussions with, we really want to treat our employees how we would want to be treated. Mm-hmm. It's as simple as that. It's not some magic formula. It's we want to be treated how we would want to be. And we want to implement policies that reflect our community. Mm-hmm. And our community values time with your family. They value the ability to go and be part of the school. They value being part of volunteer groups. All of those things are important. And so we weren't reflecting that in our policies. And mm-hmm. so we're starting to implement, and as of July 1, we'll have a leave policy that will allow for paid leave for obviously the birth of a child or any of those things, but also to care for a family member. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of our employees are caring for their parents, and that was an area that we weren't just not dealing with before. Mm-hmm. And so how can we be more flexible with that? We also are incorporating, you know, volunteer time, flex schedules. We really are investing our employees in leadership training and encouraging additional education so that they're prepared for the positions that mm-hmm. become open. What we found was that a lot of our team members really didn't see a path to growth. Mm-hmm. They didn't see how they could be prepared when that director position came open because they hadn't gotten the training. Mm-hmm. And so they weren't even going to be eligible. And so how do we get them prepared? So we've really been having a lot of discussions about how we make that better. And we're not going to stop. We're going to keep looking and figuring out what our employees need to make their lives easier.
Sure. So there are many communities, I'm sure, that would be interested in implementing some of those changes. And it sounds like it's, you know, Mason is becoming a very marketable place as you're trying to attract new employees. What advice do you have for other communities who are maybe just getting started and just beginning to think about some of these ideas?
I think, you know, we really shifted our focus in recruitment mm-hmm. into finding people that loved Mason first. Mm-hmm. And for example, we have a police officer that we've put through the academy that was on our reserve program because we knew he loved Mason first. Mm-hmm. We always ask the question, while we can't require people to live in Mason, do you plan to live in Mason? Because to me, that's a huge advantage to us if we have employees that live in Mason. What that has turned to is if you have people starting in loving the community, they're already halfway there. Mm-hmm. So now it's about making their job as easy as possible. And all of a sudden, if you have people that live in the community, if your police officers live in the community, they can go home for lunch. They can mm-hmm. suddenly, you know, volunteer at their kid's school. If they don't live here, that's really difficult to allow to do. Mm-hmm. And so we're really targeting and saying, hey, if you want a place where you can go home and have lunch with your family, if you want to take your kids to their baseball game, do all those things, you can do that and have this job, but you got to live here. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to be part of it. And mm-hmm. so I love it because it has sparked so many ideas from our employees. This last winter, we had an employee propose an outdoor ice rink, mm-hmm. and they all volunteered on their own time to make it work because they live here and they mm-hmm. wanted their kids to be on the ice rink. And so you know, and there were bumps in the roads with the ice rink, sure. but our community loved it. This week we had a hot day and one of our members said, you know, our kids would love to play in the water, so let's just open up a fire hydrant. And they did. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden you start to get a little more connected to the community. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely has to be a targeted approach of the employees you're trying to recruit.
Sure. So you currently serve as the vice president of the Michigan Women in Municipal Government, but also you serve on the work group for the League 1650 Project, which is an effort to increase the number of women serving as local government managers. So you have experience in the field. You've been here. You have experience in other fields. You have this vast background. What exactly about this project is most exciting to you?
I think it's really exciting because now that I'm in this role, which I have to tell you, people, when I first started in local government, a few of my family members, you know, you're always your biggest supporters, mm-hmm. were like, you should be a city manager. And I'm like, oh no, I could never do that job.
Sure.
And unfortunately, I think a lot of women say that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is because the traditional career progression doesn't fit most women. Mm-hmm. And that's because, you know, most city managers move from city to city and they build up that expertise. And most women don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. I'm not, it's a general statement, but I think that's something that, that restricts a lot of women from thinking those roles are for them. Mm-hmm. At least it did for me. And so, but now that I'm in the role, I have found that so many skills that most women approach work to are such a good fit for city management. Mm-hmm. Building relationships, really thinking about people as whole people, thinking mm-hmm. about your employees that way. Not that men don't do that, but I think there's just this natural tendency for women to focus more on those things. And it's really served me well. And so I'm really excited about the idea of really educating more people on the opportunities in city and local government, and that you don't necessarily have to have a traditional path. You right. can really do great work even if you didn't go through that traditional path.
Right. So talk to me a little bit about that. Do you have advice for other non-traditional candidates? What exactly was your path to get to this role? And what suggestions do you have?
Well, I have this funny story. When I was interviewing, part of the interview process was taking a tour of the facilities. Mm-hmm. And that was with staff. Mm-hmm. And so they took me to the wastewater treatment plant, the water plant, which I had never even been in one before. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they knew I wasn't asking any of the right questions. In fact, I don't even think I asked any questions. So, you know, I was like, oh, this looks great.
Sure.
But they all said that they ranked me lowest because they had a chance to rank the candidates. And I said, oh, that's so interesting because, you know, why did you feel that way? And they said, well, you didn't know any of the technical stuff. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I don't need to because you guys know it. Mm-hmm. And I was so happy that the council was able to look past that and mm-hmm. say, we need someone with leadership skills and mm-hmm. management skills. We don't need someone that knows how to run a water plant. We mm-hmm. have that. Mm-hmm. And so what I would give, if I had to tell other women that maybe don't have traditional paths, is that this role is so little about the technical. It's more about the leading. Mm-hmm. And if you're able to build those skills in other areas, it will still serve you well in mm-hmm. this role too.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's quite interesting. What an interesting story. So do you feel like there are challenges you've faced specifically as a woman in this field, other than maybe that mindset that others might have about needing to have all of the technical expertise?
I think I would say some of the challenges, I don't know that they're actually challenges. It's just different perspectives. And, mm-hmm. and there's definitely, you know, comments that are made or statements that are made that, you know, pretty surely would not be made if I was the male in a position. Mm-hmm. But I also feel very fortunate that I had some very strong male mentors along the way mm-hmm. who basically told me, you need to get a tougher skin mm-hmm. and you need to just move past that or call people on it, and really pushed me in that, you know, if I felt like I was being treated differently, to say it mm-hmm. and but also that maybe I wasn't being treated differently, maybe I was thinking I was, and that I really needed to work on that area. Mm-hmm. And so I try to always see the other person's perspective. And a lot of times it's usually coming from a good place. But there's definitely times where it's frustrating to hear the comments, you know, that maybe because I'm a mom, that's how I'm approaching it. Or maybe because, you know, well, what would my husband think
sure.
About those things? And I'm pretty sure that's probably not asked a lot to male city managers out there, but maybe it is.
Sure. So what advice then, considering all of that, do you have for women who are interested in this field?
I think it's as much as you can start talking to others in the field, it's better to get their perspective. I connected fairly quickly with a couple city managers when I was at MEDC, and they were the first people I called when I decided to apply. Mm-hmm. And I got their feedback, and they were so supportive, but they were also very realistic about mm-hmm. hey, you're going to need to set boundaries to begin with. Don't be shy about really what you want in the interview, because that's the time to say it. And I followed their advice, and it served me well. I think a lot of times women, especially in the interview process, are not as strong as they could be about what do they really want the mm-hmm. job to look like, and what are they willing to give? Because if it's not a good fit, And the person interviewing you wants something different, you want to know that too. Mm-hmm. You don't want to wait till you're in the job. And so if you know you want to be home every night with your family, then say that. Mm-hmm. If you know that it's important to you that you take vacations every year, then say that. Mm-hmm. And so those are the types of things that I think sometimes women can be a little bit not as forthright as they should be in those interviews, because a lot of times I think the councils would be supportive of it.
Sure. You talked about reaching out to a couple city managers that you knew previously. How exactly did you go about building those relationships so you knew who to reach out to when you were interested? Because we're hearing anecdotally at the League that there are lots of women who are interested in these roles, and there are a lot of students who might be interested in this field but might not know how to go about building those relationships. What advice do you have?
I think you just have to get as exposed as much as you can, whether mm-hmm. it's going to events or different things like that and seeing who you connect with. But I love some of the work that the 1640 initiative is doing as far as setting up mentorships and things mm-hmm. like that. I think that is so key. Mm-hmm. I was lucky enough to be teed up with some mentors very early on that were very supportive, mm-hmm. Successful women. And in those discussions, we had so many frank discussions about, you know, honestly toughening up a little bit mm-hmm. about how you negotiate, how you deal with a contract, and, you know, speaking up more. If you believe you deserve more money, then you need to say it. And why do you? And you need to be okay if they say no. And mm-hmm. really having some of those discussions so served me well now. And so I was so thankful to have those connections. And so I think mentorships are really important. Someone that you can not just get advice from, but will be very frank with you about where you might not be on the right track.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So kind of along those lines, do you have advice for maybe other elected officials who have heard about the 1650 Project or want to help in some way with the cause of that? Do you have advice or suggestions for them?
I think it's really important work. And I can tell you, I've talked a lot about this initiative and I've gotten mixed reviews. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some who feel, why does there need to be a specific initiative related to this? Why isn't this just happening on its own? And do we really need to focus more on women in particular? And I think it's important to have those conversations because I deal with this on a regular basis, even with my own staff, mm-hmm. where they're counting themselves out before they even have considered the job. Mm-hmm. You know, they're concerned about, well, I'm thinking about starting a family, so maybe this isn't the right job for me. Or I'm not sure I can really take on those responsibilities. And as the supervisor or the leader in the organization, I can clearly see that they can take on those responsibilities with no problem at all. Mm-hmm. But they're counting themselves out before they even get there. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of data about that, about how women will not apply for a position until they have the skills identified, whereas men will apply for positions in anticipation of gaining those skills. Mm-hmm. And so there is a different approach, and you mm-hmm. have to start focusing on getting women to think differently, mm-hmm. that they don't need the traditional path, that it's okay if they're going to start a family, they could still have this job. Mm-hmm. A lot of those things, you know, take time and they take mentoring in order to get them over that hump. So I think it's really important. I think that initiative is the only way that that number is going to change.
Mm-hmm. Sure. We think so too. That's why we're doing it.
Yeah.
And it's something that's very exciting to us. And we've gotten immense positive feedback from a lot of women who have voiced those same concerns that you just aired, who want to be better and want to improve and really want to be in this field and do this work. And it's invigorating for us as staff. So along those same lines, just kind of continuing on, I think we recognize through this project that it's important to tap into the allies that we have. Do you have suggestions for male colleagues and how they can help kind of foster this initiative and help their staff or people that they know, women that they know, get into this field or encourage them to come into this field?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was lucky enough to have some very strong male mentors mm-hmm. That really pushed me in ways where they brought me to the table early. Mm-hmm. I remember very vividly one of my first jobs, the city attorney in that community, was drafting documents and told me, I needed to be in the meeting. Now here I am right out of college. I don't know what I'm doing. Here's mm-hmm. an attorney who's been in the field for a long time. And he had a very frank conversation with me about, he's an attorney who makes recommendations and I could read a legal document just as good as he could. Mm-hmm. And I needed to really read the document and become educated on it and identify where it needed to change. And he immediately erased all my preconceived notions about I wasn't strong enough to be in that meeting mm-hmm. or I didn't know enough. And so I had counted myself out before I was even in there.
Right.
And so having males that are willing to push women and not let them count themselves out, mm-hmm. They talk a lot about and lean in, letting them have a seat at the table, mm-hmm. encouraging them to talk and knowing that women usually don't talk first. Mm-hmm. And so how do you engage them in the conversation and really understanding those differences so that the best decision is made in the end because all have contributed. And so, I mean, it's just being conscious of those, mm-hmm. Those different, and I think for me, those, and I think back now, those strong male mentors all had daughters. Mm-hmm. And I think that really helped, because they wanted me to be successful like they would want their daughter to be successful.
Sure. Well, and I know that we're thrilled to have you speaking as one of our experts on the topic of economic development at our 1650 Women's Municipal Leadership Program. It's our inaugural program, and we've been getting a number of applicants in, so we're excited to kick that off in August. But switching gears back to Mason, we've heard a lot about the progress that's been made both economically and with kind of your development here in City Hall with your employees and with, different policies that you have here. But what's really on the horizon for this community? What do you see coming up next?
Oh, it's so exciting. I love Mason, if you haven't been able to tell that yet.
Right.
But I think what Mason has that other communities don't have is you have the ability to have an impact. As a resident, as someone that's an employee, as someone that's a business owner, mm-hmm. I mean, you can have an impact. You go to a larger community, you can kind of get lost in the shuffle. But in Mason, if you want to do something, if you want to do a project, I mean, I have so many examples of people who have said, hey, I'd like to put up an event to do this, to raise money for this. And it happens. Mm-hmm. It's possible, and you can have a huge impact. And I think a lot of people are looking for that social connection now. Mm-hmm. And they've become so detached that now they're that's something they yearn for. And my nephew visited last summer. He lives outside of Chicago, and he does a lot of, big trips, mountain climbing, all those kinds of things. And I remember mm-hmm. very clearly he said, oh, I want to live in a place like this mm-hmm. because he could feel it. He could feel that he could have a connection. I get very excited. We have bloggers that come through all the time, and we just had one that compared us to Stars Hollow. I don't know those of you that know Stars Hollow, but
Gilmore Girls. Gilmore I certainly Girls. Know it.
Yes, right? So we get excited about those things right. because we feel that way about Mason. And so there's a clear sense of place that's already here, mm-hmm. and you want to be part of it. We always say Mason is the place where you want to be a local, and it's true. People want to be from here. They want to be part of the community. And so we just try to emphasize that with all aspects, including our employees.
Well, it's very evident why you were awarded the Community Builder Award from the League this year in 2018. Anything you'd like to add?
No, just that I can't say enough about the League and the work that they do because, without that support, we wouldn't be able to do this work. And it's really important that we stay connected.
Great. Thanks so much for joining us, Deb.
You're very welcome.
This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.mml.org and join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.